I'm developmental and educational psychologist, and my research also touches economic freedom. For example, in my last paper, co-authored with Thomas Coyle, we found out that economic freedom boosts the effect of cognitive ability. The higher the level of economic freedom, the stronger are the effects of cognitive ability. I want to speak today about immigration and the effects of immigration and what can be done. And these are my four main central concepts. First, people's attributes are decisive for the fate of nations. Not institutions, people create their institutions, but the important background factor are the attributes of peoples. Peoples differ in these attributes. These patterns are roughly stable across environment and time. They are not totally stable, and there are mean changes, but the patterns are roughly stable. And the conclusion is, if peoples are changing in a region, in a geographical area, in a state, in a country, the aspects of a country will accordingly change, for example, the political institution, the economy, productivity, and so on. And this I will show with empirical data. And at the end, I want to give some suggestions. I deal with a psychological view on human capital studies. And what is human capital? Human capital is all what is important for being a productive member of society, especially in economy. What are the psychological attributes important here? Cognitive ability, covering intelligence, knowledge on the intelligent use of knowledge. Industrious discipline, something like diligence, conscientiousness, physical attributes, health, hearing ability, then personality and attitudes like agreeableness, and special competence like social competence. They are all important not only for the economy, not only for jobs, but also for life. And there are many studies, for example, from Gary S. Becker showing that these attributes are important for individual success. This approach is nothing new. It can be traced back to Adam Smith. What is, in his view, human capital? These are the acquired and useful abilities of all the inhabitants or members of the society. And important here, and it's not an individual approach, it's also, or not only individual, it's also an approach at the level of society, and we will later continue at this level. What are these useful abilities according to Adam Smith? The qualities most useful to ourselves are, first of all, superior reason and understanding. That is cognitive ability, intelligence, by which we are able of discerning the remote consequences of all our actions and of foreseeing the advantage or detriment which is likely to result from them. So you can see the future, you can plan, you can anticipate what will happen if you do A or B. And secondly, self-command, by which we are enabled to abstain from present pleasure or to endure present pain in order to obtain a greater pleasure or to avoid a greater pain in some future time. In psychology, we term this today delay of gratification or economics, similarly, and time preference. Cognitive ability covers intelligence, the store of true and relevant knowledge, and the intelligent use of this knowledge, and intelligence itself means to use thinking to solve problems, to be able to reason, to make inductive and deductive logical conclusions, to be able to think abstractly, to categorize, to make correct categories, to process abstract information like math, and to understand structures, to build structures, to find meaning, to construct meaning, to have insight. And this cognitive ability or intelligence is very predictive. This means statistically correlated with positive results in an individual life. Individuals with higher intelligence or cognitive ability show better job performance, higher income. They show less traffic accidents, less violation of speed limits, less traffic fatalities. They live longer. This correlation of 0.18. This is their intelligence was measured at the age of 11. And then they looked how long the people lived. This is a Scottish study. And the boys and girls with higher intelligence, they lived longer. Higher intelligence is also negatively correlated with out of wedlock birth, with teen birth, also high intelligence less out of wedlock births, less teen births, positive correlated with moral judgment, with moral behavior, negatively with crime, positively with political participation, they go more voting, and positively with a preference for economic freedom. This all looks like as if intelligence is correlated and additionally it has an effect on a burger lifestyle, which is good for individual success and beneficial individual success and success of society. Why is cognitive ability relevant? First of all, it helps to be successful in selection processes. If you are smart, you are good in education, you're good in university, and you will achieve higher degrees. And if you have a higher degree, formal degree, you have the possibility to work in jobs with which are less dangerous and you have more income. Additionally, it is an indicator of health. People who are smart are also more healthy in other aspects. But the most important factor, the most important reason why cognitive ability has a positive impact is because it improves problem solving, insight, foresight, rationality, what is called phronesis in the old Greek term, which is all relevant to be successful in a job or to achieve high income or to manage one's wealth, to be a good driver, and to be a smart and good citizen. And the same we can found at the international level. At the level of countries, but with higher correlations. Why? I will explain later. The average ability level of a nation, measured by psychometric intelligence tests or student assessment tests, is positively correlated with GDP, very high correlation here of 0.76, even higher if it's locked, positively correlated with wealth, positive correlates with longevity, countries with a higher cognitive ability level, average higher cognitive ability level, on average people live longer. With hate as an indicator of long-term wealth, is positively correlated with technological security, airlines less crash down in road, less road accidents, and less accidents in the world of work. Positive correlated with innovation, negatively with AIDS, murder and corruption, positively with government effectiveness, rule of law, political freedom, economic freedom, and meritoric principles that say that people who achieve more will gain more, will have a higher social position. And these correlations are very robust across different indicators of ability, these aspects across different paradigms found by economists and by psychologists. They are very, very, very robust. There's no replication crisis as in other social sciences and in psychology. This doesn't mean that institutions are totally irrelevant. This I want to stress. We have, of course, evidence that, for example, capitalism is important. In South Korea, the people are taller than in North Korea. In the former East Germany, the people were smaller than in West Germany. I published this 7 years ago, and the last president of the former socialist East Germany country has then criticized me in the public because I have shown such anti-socialist empirical data. Mm-hmm. It was Egon Krenz. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we know there are research showing that European institutions still have a positive impact today in the developing world. A long history of English or French colonization leads to higher GDP today and lower child mortality. But for understanding today's economic and political differences between countries, cognitive human capital and a special level of its elites is crucial. Here is a path analysis. In psychology, we frequently use path analysis. Here are the relations between variables are calculated considering the correlations with other variables, and we usually interpret these effects as causal effects, but of course we need additional evidence to interpret them as causal effects. You have here on the left, you have cognitive ability. Here in parentheses, you have correlations. They vary between minus 1, 0, and plus 1. And here in front of the parentheses, we have the path effects or the regression coefficients. They also usually vary between minus 1, 0, and plus 1. Yet the larger the number, the stronger is the statistical effect. Cognitive ability is highly correlated with the cognitive ability level of the elite, has a positive impact on the competence level of leading politicians, a positive impact on government effectiveness, on economic freedom, on competitiveness, on innovation, on productivity, and at the end leading to higher wealth. And if you compare the effect of cognitive ability with the effect of economic freedom, then today, to understand the wealth differences or productivity differences between countries, it is more important to look at the cognitive ability level and less at economic freedom. Other variables in this model are not important. For example, if a country is in Africa, has no impact, if you consider all the other variables. The absolute latitude of a country, if it's in the south or north or near to the equator, not important at all. Here, and natural resource rents is also not important, but of course there are some countries who are only rich due to oil. Some exceptions always exist. This was a cross-sectional analysis, and now let's look at a longitudinal analysis. A longitudinal analysis means that we can analyze the reciprocal effects, that cognitive ability has an effect on wealth, and wealth also on cognitive ability, or that economic freedom has an effect on wealth and ability, and vice versa. And here we see cognitive ability has a positive effect on economic freedom, very large. And economic freedom has also a positive effect on cognitive human capital. That means in freer countries, cognitive ability develops more positively. People, for example, more invest in education or more in diligence. But much more important is the effect of cognitive ability on economic freedom. More smarter countries will create institutions leading to more economic freedom. Cognitive ability has also a positive impact on wealth, but wealth has also a positive impact on cognitive human capital. And I will show this in two slides. There are different effects at different wealth levels. The correlations between cognitive human capital and wealth are increasing across time. From 1970 to 2010, across 40 years, the correlations are rising. This means that in modern society, more and more important becomes cognitive ability level to achieve wealth. And I adopt this cognitive capitalism. So we have not only positive effects on economy, but also on politics. Cognitive human capital leads to more positive politics, more rule of law, more political freedom, and more democracy. When I gave my first talk in English 10 years ago in San Francisco, I dealt with positive effects of intelligence and education on democracy, but my pronunciation was much worse than today, and I spoke 20 minutes always about effects on democracy. I think Hans-Hermann Hoppe would like to hear this, if I pronounce this in this way. But you see, a much stronger effect of cognitive ability on positive politics than of wealth. And if we look at the different wealth levels of countries, we see that for the poor countries, wealth becomes more and more important for developed cognitive ability. But for the rich countries, wealth is nearly not more important to develop ability, but ability becomes more and more important to go further to progress in economic productivity, because modernization increases cognitive challenges. And here we see the higher the level of cognitive ability, even the stronger become the effects. There are no diminishing returns. I have done this study with Thomas Coyle, an US-American psychologist. So why is cognitive ability relevant at the level of nations? First of all, cognitive ability increases at similar level individuals, efficiency, rationality, and so we have aggregated effects at the level of nations. But now I will come to show some work or refer to some work of sociologists. Yesterday we had some bashing of sociology, but there are really good sociologists who have done important work. For example, Norbert Elias, he has shown in his studies that there's an interconnection between psychological development and development of society between psychogenesis and sociogenesis. People's attributes have an effect on institutions, and institutions again have an effect on the development of individuals. And last, here I cite a work of Garrett Jones. He's an economist from George Mason. A hive mind, he has termed this phenomenon. There are positive interaction effects, multiplier effects, because smarter people, for example, better cooperate, they make less mistakes, and in groups with smarter peoples, the effect of cognitive ability is boosted. So, I spoke about the positive effects of cognitive ability on the development of nations. But are there any differences in cognitive ability across nations? Yes, there are huge differences. And this is a new information we had not had 20 years ago. 20 years ago, people, scientists, all believe more or less that all countries are similarly smart. And if there are differences, it's only due to problems of testing or maybe some not enduring differences, for example, in nutrition. But today we know, due to the student assessment studies and due to the work of Richard Lin, who collected many intelligence test results, that there are very, very large differences in cognitive ability between countries. Let's give only three examples. TIMSS is a study in math and science for 10-year-old students, pupils. The lowest result was found in Yemen, 200 points in student assessment scale. It's about IQ 56. The largest values in Korea, about 590. Difference of more than 100 IQ points and of about, calculated, 11 years of school. And the same you can find in other studies, in PISA or in IQ study. There are very, very large differences. Here's a map of the average results in the world. The lowest results are found in sub-Saharan Africa and the highest in East Asia, followed by North Europe, Middle Europe, North America, Australia, and New Zealand, and then Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, Latin America, Arabian countries, India, Southeast Asia. So I have shown there's a huge, there's a very important impact of ability on the development of nations, and that there are large differences. But are these differences stable? Yes, they are stable. They are first stable across different studies. I have done here statistical analysis, factor analysis. We use this frequently in psychology, and we have here, at maximum, we can have loadings at one. And the higher the loading, that means the more similar are the results in different tests. We are seeing here the results of TIMSS, of PIRLS, of PISA, different scales, literacy, math, science in different years, and psychometric intelligence tests here too, and former old studies in student achievement, and they more or less converge at one very strong G factor. The results are very similar, not always identical. For example, Austria 2000 PISA, the results were a little bit too good, but in other studies, the results were highly replicated. And we have stability across environments. East Asians are good in East Asia and in North America. Vietnamese are good in Vietnam and in Germany. Japanese are good in Japan and South and North America. And sub-Saharan Africans show low ability results in Africa and South and North America, but at a clearly higher level in North America. In Africa, we have results on average about 70, and in America, 85 and a little bit higher. And there we see there can be a positive change depending on environment. And also important for America to know, about 23% of the genetic heritage of blacks, of African Americans, is of European descent. And these results are not only stable across tests, across environment, but also across time. Here we have positive correlations, for example, of the technological level 1,000 years before the common era, before Christ, with today's cognitive ability level correlation of 0.48. And so you have across time, with different indicators of cognitive achievement, of intellectual achievement, or of wealth, you have always positive correlations. And also economists have found this pattern I will cite here two studies. The evidence suggests that economic development is affected by traits that have been transmitted across generations over the very long run, biologically and culturally. This is written by economists. Or another quote, our regression discontinuity and et cetera, shows a strong association between pre-colonial ethnic institutional traits and contemporary regional development. Why is this so? Why we have such a strong stability, or large stability across time? Maybe due to path effects. If the parental generation has created a beneficial environment, the children are grown up in this environment and will again reproduce this aspects of environment, or due to culture, or due to genetic effect. Both here was mentioned here by the first scientist. So, I have shown that ability level is important for the development of societies, that there's a large difference, and that these differences are stable across tests, environment, and time. What we know today about the difference between natives and immigrant inability. Maybe it could be that there are coming people from, on average, low ability countries, but the elite is coming. Or maybe the environmental quality of, for example, United States schools or German educational system or what else, or France, even if it's not so good, it's better than in the developing countries, is so good that the immigrants could catch up and achieve a similar level. However, that is not true, except we have nearly in all countries, except for Gulf countries and Australia, we have the pattern that the native's ability level is higher than the ability level of the immigrants. Only in the Gulf countries there's a large positive gap favoring immigrants and a small positive gap for Australia. And the largest negative, or very large negative, in the Western world we can find here in Scandinavia and in Central Europe. In Germany, there's a difference between natives and immigrants, average cognitive ability level of 8 IQ points. And here I calculated the gains or losses by migration, also considering the percentage of immigrants. The larger is the percentage, the larger are the effects, and the largest negative effect we can find for Central Europe, because we have many immigrants at a relatively low level. But consider the recent refugee immigration is not included. We have, until now, no numbers. Blue means immigrants have higher levels. Australia, Gulf countries, and Ireland, Kyrgyzstan, Moldavia, and this is, but Moldavia and Kyrgyzstan, we have not so much reliable data. Have migrants, on average, the home country ability level? Yes, on average, this is true. Usually, immigrants represent about the average of their country of origin. There are some important exceptions: Iranians in US, Indians in US and West, South Africans in Australia and New Zealand. And we have here some systematic research based on PISA by a Dutch sociologist, Jaap Dronkos. He reanalyzed PISA data, and he has shown that the ability level of immigrants of one country are roughly similar across different immigration countries. For example, the Portuguese in Germany are similar to the Portuguese in Luxembourg. Not identical, but similar. They have similar ability levels. And if you want to predict ability level of immigrants, it is more important to look at the home country, the country of origin ability level, than at the ability level of the receiving country. When you want to know the ability level, for example, of Arabians in Germany, you have not to look at the ability level of Germans, but at the ability level of Arabians. Here, strong effect of home country. But there's also some effect of the receiving country. There's no zero effect. And you can compare the ability levels directly of the two, of the immigrants with their home country, with their country of origin, and there's only a gain of one IQ point by selection or modification. And the Spanish researcher Julio Cabana comes to the result, another one not wrong, because immigration hardly affects students' PISA scores, which remain at the level of the country of origin and do not come closer to the level of the destination country. So, I have shown ability is important, there are huge differences, they are stable, and they are replicated by the immigrants. What will be now the effects of immigration? We can do such a syllogistic talk, we can apply logical reasoning, like an aspect of intelligence, based on previous robust empirical results with strong theoretical background. The immigration of people of low cognitive human capital will show negative consequences for economy and society. However, two qualifications, immigrant groups differ. The immigrants from Vietnam are different to the immigrants, for example, from Mexico, or the ability level from China, Chinese is different from the ability level of sub-Saharan Africa. And of course, cognitive ability is not all, personality also counts. And what is always correct, I've not mentioned until now, individual differs. There may be smart people from Africa and dull people from China. They exist. But on average, the ability levels are not in this way. What are the economic and fiscal effects of the last immigration waves? Calculated by, I choose here only very highly reputable scientists as sources. The first source is Bernd Raffelhüschen. He's an economist in Freiburg, and he said that the last refugee immigration wave will cost about 17 billion euro per year in Germany. Even if the immigrants are integrated within 6 years into the labor market, the additional long-term costs will be around 900 billion euro. 900 billion euro, it's incredibly high. If qualification integration would need more time, the costs will be considerably higher. Another economist from Kiel, he calculated costs of 55 billion per year. Others, like Lagrange, who is paid by a refugee support organization, came to more positive results. For past immigrants, Hans-Werner Sinn from Munich, also a very highly respected economist in Germany, he has calculated costs of about 1,800 euro per year. And Holger Bonin, economist from Mannheim, he calculated that the past immigration, not the now, but the past immigration, cost per life an immigrant about 79,000 euro per life, compared to 3,000 euro per life for a native. Maybe this sounds strange for you. How could it be always negative? It is negative because we are increasing death and death from generation to generation. That means immigrants show a 25 times higher, greater loss compared to natives. And even in Canada, you have a negative effects of immigration. Canada and in Germany, if you look at the newspapers and so on, it's always seen as a positive example how to deal with immigration. Oh, look at Canada, how they are doing this so well. But it's not done well, because also in Canada, the effects are negative. One average immigrant costs per year $6,000, and altogether, depending on the number of immigrants, costs per year 24 billion or 16 billion Canadian dollar. And these calculations did not include very important costs. The costs of crime are really, really high. I think many of you will know the calculations, how much costs, for example, a murder or a rape. Economists have tried to calculate the costs of crime, and these are all not included in the former studies. Dealing with crime, we have one problem. Byron wrote, he has written a book about diversity effects, has described it 6 years ago, that in reading through the literature on crime among immigrants, some from reputable sources and others more anecdotal, one is struck by the absence of sound government statistics. There are no really good governmental official statistics. This is still today the case. There are many somewhat hidden single reports, but usually the ethnic or religious background is not mentioned. And of course, two qualifications. Immigrants are not identical to different immigrants from different countries. There are huge differences. And of course, men show much more crime than women, and younger men much more than older men. And especially risk group seems to be immigrants from a certain geographical cultural background. This is an opaque term. We want to continue this conference also in the next years, so I have chosen this term. Kierkegaard, this is not a philosopher, this is a young Danish linguist who has given up to study linguistics. He has done some studies to predict the crime level of individual immigrants in different countries, and he's shown that this geographical cultural background is predictive for crime. It's similar predictive to home country EQ, but more predictive than home country GDP. And the similar level you have for the Netherlands. So the cultural or geographic effects are robust across countries and controls. And a second study from Noah Kahle. Noah Kahle is a young sociologist from Oxford. He has tried to predict terrorism level in different Western countries. And the terrorism level in Western countries is higher the more persons you have of a group with a certain geographical background. And this is a very robust result, also integrating controls like GDP. And this is exactly that what have said the East European politicians like Václav Klaus or Viktor Orban, who said, no, we do not want these immigrants because we do not want to have certain aspects which are not beneficial for our societies. One example from German-speaking countries, sexual assault in public swimming pools. There's nothing new under the sun. This was first reported from a similar group in the 60s in Paris from Spiegel. Spiegel is the most important German news magazine. In 50 years ago, you found these things, but today it's really difficult to find such reports. What they have written 50 years ago, Parisian women get spoiled babbling in pools. Where there is paddling a single bikini, she is shortly encircled above and below water by, this term we would not use today anymore, brownish swimmers. 10 or 20 Algerian hands pull their fasteners or rob her the textile. Consequence, the bathing girls avoid the pools and also their male friends. Spirited pool attendants who venture to step in towards freebooters, also to try to control them, were after work threatened by hostile routes. Parisian police was set to the task to cope with a colony of 200,000 Algerians, which represents only 3% of the capital's population, but which is responsible for 32% of homicides, 39% of car thefts, and 58% of theft using firearms. What is not here written, you need to consider age differences and sex differences, also if there are more male young Algerians compared to French. This is not done here, but I assume, and still today, even if you do this, you come to higher rates. We have this, this was written 50 years ago. We have the similar problem today in Germany, Austria, and other countries. What is not written here in this report is we have today also problems with terrorism and some psychopathical violence I will later shortly mention. You cannot find this in traditional German newspapers, but there are privately organized news blogs or people, for example, this site, Einzelfall Map, run by four women and one man who count every, for example here, swimming pool occurrence. One example from one day in the summer, 21st of July, we had sexual assaults in Lower Saxony, in Hesse, in Baden-Württemberg, in Bavaria. We had them in North Rhine-Westphalia, we had them also in Austria. We have also sexual abuse on slides and showers in changing rooms, violence against other guests, not following the instruction of pool supervisors. When I was in summer in West Germany in a swimming pool, I have seen first time in my life that there is security service. I asked one of my uncles, he will become 80 years this year. He lived in four different German-speaking countries. He lived in National Socialist Deutsche Reich. He lived in Socialist Eastern Germany. He lived in Western Germany, and he is living now since 40 years in Austria. He lived in three different political systems, four different German-speaking countries, and he had made so many trips when he was younger in his life to all over the world. And I asked him, have you ever seen in your life security service in the swimming pool? And he said to me, no, he has never seen in his life anywhere security service. And these are also additional costs we have to add to the costs before mentioned. Further examples, violence in sports, here also many times mad violence, like done by Zinedine Zidane in his fast game and the final game of the Capo Mundial, I don't know what to say in English. Or you have pathological violence against own wife, against own children, against relatives. For example, in 2014, an Afghan dentist killed in religious delusion his own family. You have rape and group sex, sexual assault, Cologne, Stockholm, riots, France, Sweden, England. And you have increasing violence against Jews in Belgium and France, Sweden, starting also in Germany. And this leads to the Jews decamp for Israel. More and more Jews are going to Israel. These were special effects of a special kind of immigration, but you have also effects of diversity. I will conclude, I will be ready in six, 7 minutes. We have also diversity effects independent of the special characteristics of the immigrants. The ability level of the natives is somewhat affected by diversity, but the ability level of the immigrants is much more affected by diversity. It means the more immigrants you have in a class, the lower will be the average achievement level, average learning level in a school. And this is one important result, that all these negative effects are less serious for the average native, but they are more serious for the just existing immigrants or just for the coming immigrants. The people who mostly benefit of fewer immigrants are the immigrants themselves. Then you have a negative effect on trust. Diversity decreases trust, have a negative effect, impact on economy and society. And diversity reduces the willing for redistribution. Last week, I found a result, an example for this. I've read that food banks receive less and less support in Germany. The newspapers have written that the food banks who give food away to poor people, the food banks receive less food because of shelf life and competition. But there were no changes in the last 5 to 10 years in shelf life or competition. There was only a change in the last year in the composition of people who go into the food bank. Now, more, I don't know the numbers, but I assume about half or a little bit more refugees are going to the food banks. We have also effects on science. We will find more studies on stereotypes, prejudices, racism, and multiculturalism, diversity. We'll have politicization of research, ignoring research coming not to politically wished results, which is frequently labeled as being right, racist, or similar. And if it's something right or racist, it's not true. It's assumed. We'll have more cloud cuckoo land and commissioned research coming to the expected results. One example is research of TENT. TENT is a refugee supportive organization. They found that investing €1 in refugees will have economic benefits. I think this is true. If you invest money in education, in training, human capital training, this will have a positive impact. But then they concluded we need also anti-discrimination laws, and they concluded that the refugees as a group will have a positive impact on the economy and society, and this last is not true. The first is true. If you invest, you will have usually a positive effect, but the last, that the refugee immigration will have positive impact on society, is certainly not true. We have problems in research. For example, the results of stereotype accuracy research are not read, are not accepted. The average correlation between stereotypes and criteria is about 0.81. There's nothing, there's no social psychological result that is more true than stereotypes. You can predict with stereotypes very good at the group level average behavior of people or average results of people. And we have a problem in the social sciences, but also in psychology, that the political diversity is less and less reduced, and becoming the political milieu at university becomes more and more left-wing. We have, for example, in the United States, 14 left-wing psychologists for one right-wing, or 14 liberal for one conservative. We have also effects on media. Media bias produces a biased view. One example from Sweden. Police in Finland have questioned 8 Swedish men following claims a woman was gang raped on a Viking Line ferry in Finnish waters over the weekend. 8 Swedish men had made this. On closer inspection, this was a newspaper, and this was what you can find in newspapers, and this you can find in internet and Gatestone Institute. On close inspection, it turned out that 7 of the 8 suspects were Somalis and one was Iraqi. None of them had Swedish citizenship, so they were not even Swedish at that sense. And we have similar occurrences in Germany, for example. There was a story last year that Syrian refugees rescued a member of NPD. NPD is a Nazi following party, and Syrian refugees should have rescued him out of his burning car. But bloggers had found out that there are no evidence for this news, and most probably it were other people, bus drivers, who rescued him. Or and there was a flood in Germany, and Austrian TV transported refugees to the houses, and they wanted to film how refugees are helping the natives against the flood. Yeah, news produced, which is not true. Today is not more possible to inform oneself in standard media about certain subjects being inclined to political correctness. So you have to use other information like letters of readers if they are published, or alternative news portals, but you use always to cross-check the information, privately made pages, bloggers, or you need to search for non-PC key terms. Then you will find a totally different reality. And we have effects in politics. Affirmative action is demanded in public service, in parties, in companies, in police. And this was also described by Thilo Sarrazin. For example, in Berlin, they are doing affirmative action for immigrants and to bring immigrants and police. They reduce the necessary time without crime from 10 to 5 years. They reduce the what is necessary to have good German language command and the examination requirements. So, now come my 2 last points. I've shown large differences. They are stable. There are differences between immigrants and natives, and there is a huge amount of empirical information on effects of immigrants in Western countries, not only in school, not only economy, but also in the sphere of culture. But how will it be in the future? It could be like it was in the past, argued for about revolution. We have now a kind of revolution. This is a transitory phase. We have to suffer now a little bit. Usually not we have to suffer, but other people, the poorer people or also the immigrants, they suffer a little bit. But in the future, they will become like a paradise for society. Their ability levels will change. They will become smarter and they will adapt and so on and so on. And there's some evidence that the ability level of immigrants is really rising. There are studies from Netherlands showing ability level is rising. And there's also studies from the countries who are sending immigrants, for example, for Turkey. The ability level of Turkey is rising from decade to decade. But for example, in Germany or in Sweden and so on, it's not rising anymore. And so the gaps between, for example, Turkey and Germany or Arabian countries in Germany or between immigrants and natives become smaller and smaller. That's some positive message. But we see also there's a pattern stability. And there are limits of gap closing. Let's show you here results from the United States. About 50 years ago, there was a gap between blacks and whites of more than 15 IQ points. Today, only we have 10 IQ points. The same is more or less true for Hispanics. We have a smaller becoming gap, but the gap closing more or less stopped here. The gap closing stopped since 20, 30 years. And the same pattern we can found. The same pattern we can found for PISA-TIMSS results. We see an increase from the first to second generation, but this increase is becoming slower and slower, smaller and smaller. And the gap narrowing is especially limited in encapsulated communities. And if the communities become larger and larger and larger, the adaption will become smaller and smaller because they live in a separate world, less admixture and less contact to the native population. So finally, what can be done? Usually are suggested some social strategies which are somewhat effective. Offer language courses. Of course, language courses are, they learn the language. Offer education for adults, offer human capital training, offer integration courses, offer for the youth, preschool, more school, discipline education, improve school quality. I've shown that in a country where you use tests, central exams, or more autonomous schools, you have early enrollment, the gaps between natives and immigrants are smaller. Look for not too many immigrants in one class, look for a certain admixture of the groups. And if it's not done, you have to do some consequences that the immigrants leave the country. But this will only help somewhat. What we need also a change in immigration. We need a policy, we need a meritorious immigration policy. First of all, we need control of immigration. The Princeton philosopher Michael Walzer has written about this, that countries have the collective right of admission refusal. Also, Oxford economist and migrant researcher Paul Collier, the control of immigration is a human right. The right to control immigration is asserted by all societies. You do not have the automatic right to move to Kuwait, nor do the Chinese have the automatic right to move to Angola. And for this, you need to control borders like is done by Spain. Many people, also newspapers, the news, they do not know the positive example of Spain. Spain has done some contracts with North African countries that all immigrants that are coming are sent back. And this has also this result that there are very few, a very small fatality rate. Here, this is a presentation of Hans-Werner Sinn. He has shown in Spain we have in 1 year 100 death people, but in Greek 800 and in central Italy route 3,000. And why we have so few deaf people in Spain? Because they bring all back and so nobody will come. Same is done by Australia. Apply meritorious principles. Heckman, you think you know, is Nobel Prize winner in economy. He has suggested with his co-author Carnero, only skilled immigrants are permitted to enter the country. One way to do is to sell entry visas. This would screen out the unskilled. To sell. The other suggestion is by a lawyer, Bradford. She suggested that immigrants should put a deposit of $50,000 in an immigration fund, and if they are successful, they will the money will be refunded. And not only the immigrants can pay in this fund, but also organizations or the employers. And they have all interest to only pay $50,000 for such persons who will be successful in the country, so they will not lose their money. The similar ideas were given by Gary Becker, Richard Posner, Julian Simon, and the idea is that markets, including banks, sponsors, or companies, would allocate entry permits to those who derive the greatest utility from migrating, and who are therefore willing to pay the highest price for the right to migrate. And young, healthy, productive people will have in a short time enough money to pay this back. This also includes, according to Gary Becker, also a Nobel Prize winner in economy, This also includes political refugees. If they don't have their own money, they can receive credits by banks or they can be paid by organizations. And some German or Swiss economists have suggested refund if they are successful. Or select for ability. Jason Richwine has suggested in his Harvard dissertation, no, don't ask for money. Look in tests. If you have a smart people, even without money, they will be effective, they will be efficient, they will be beneficial for the receiving country. Similar to Richard Posner, a judge in the United States. Further steps, reduce social benefits, family chain immigration, recommended by Collier. Prefer cultural affinity if you receive immigrants, also suggested by Collier. And these are all very important, very famous, very highly reputable scientists at highly reputable institutions. But in Germany or in the European politics on immigration, nobody reads them, nobody takes their advice. But some qualification, be careful for selecting cognitive elites. If you take cognitive elites from developing countries, they are not anymore there. The developing countries will suffer. And if you take many smart immigrants, you will discourage your own youth. They will not invest more time to, for example, in STEM, as is described for the United States by Byron Root. Finally, my last page. Doesn't work more anymore. Start remigration. Okay, I will tell you about remigration. Immigrants with crime record, they should immigrate. Immigrants, they do not positively contribute to economy and society, use compulsory immigration. And if countries do not accept them, use money that they will accept them. Germany invests so much money in developing aid, also via European Community, European Union. This money could be also used for countries that they take back their immigrants. And if this does not work, Thilo Sarrazin has suggested that use force, use some ships and so on, and then they will take back their own people or bring them to other countries like done by Australia. But most important, not remigration is the solution. You have to control the borders and develop a meritorious immigration policy. Thank you very much for your attention.